Om Shanti. Welcome to everyone in the hall, welcome to everyone online, and welcome to our panel with all mental health professionals. And of course, Baba is the big mental health counselor in our Yakya, but we have such a diversity of countries, of cultures, so we need to know how do we do it on the ground when we have mental health issues. And today Sarah will interview the panel, and Sarah is almost 50 years with Baba, and she is a retired psychiatrist, if I'm saying it right. And with her wisdom and very, very peaceful nature, she will draw the jewels out of these beautiful souls. And the topic for today is current issues in mental health, cultural perspectives, and BK's being trauma informed. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. I hope my voice lasts, because I've had the same friend as a lot of us have had during this trip that has affected my throat. So sorry if I'm a little bit croaky. So I'm Shanti and good morning. The Mental Health Advisory Group International exists in a lot of countries. There are mental health support groups, not every country. And the core group has been going for a long time, and recently India has also created a group and is joining us, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But I think it's becoming clear to all of us that as Kali Yuga reaches its kind of peak, that mental health issues are on the rise in the general population. Everyone's feeling obviously quite anxious and worried about what's happening in the world, and all kinds of other new things keep emerging. Addiction to technology seems to be very popular right now. There's a very interesting book called Stolen Focus about how all these devices are really eroding our attention, and we got given a digital wellness book being Integrated Retreat. It seems to be a real rise in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Lots of people are thinking they've got that. Autism, neurodiverse kind of diagnoses, and of course the usual of depression, anxiety, psychosis, mood disorders, personality disorders, you name it. So In the group, what we had are very aware of as well is that how you interpret those kind of symptoms or those feelings or those emotions, a lot depends on what culture you're from. And so any kind of mental health symptom will have a different meaning or interpretation according to the culture that you've grown up in. And for the West, we tend to talk about it in terms of a biopsychosocial model. So we understand maybe there's something happening in the brain, there's something happening in the social environment you're in, and your family upbringing, your attachments with your parents, things like that. But in other cultures, there are very different models of why someone might have a mental illness and be behaving in a certain way. And those models can come with a lot of different attitudes of stigma and shame, and all these kind of things really stop people getting appropriate help or being treated in a dignified and respectful way for their problems. So we thought it would be very useful to explore that a bit today. And the other thing that it's been coming up a lot is just the whole increase in what we call trauma. Now, trauma is slightly different to adversity. We all have adversity. Bad things happen to everyone in Kali Yuga. That's, we all know that. But trauma, and certainly clinically, when we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, that's when the trauma has really kind of affected us in a deep way, and we can't get it out of our minds, or we're very hypervigilant and kind of reliving that incident over and over. So, but trauma is coming up in so many different ways, and what is being recommended now is that organizations become what's called trauma-informed, so that we understand that when people come to us, they're coming with a story that may have a lot of different things attached to it, and we need to be sensitive to that. So we thought those two topics would be very interesting and worth exploring, which is what we're going to do this morning with, and if you think about it, you know, the statistic is 1 in 4 people in the population will have some kind of mental health disorder. So even looking around this room, 1 in 4 of us will have something, probably. And, you know, do we talk about it? How do we access help, especially within the Brahmin family? I think this is a really important topic. So we're going to start first by just looking at the cultural aspects. And I think I'll just introduce each speaker just before they speak, so you've got them in the right context. But I'll just very briefly say Mary Jean is from Canada. Joret is from Israel, Pradeep is from Mauritius, and Kalpana is here from India. So we have a nice cultural mix of experiences, and I'll introduce them in more depth as we go along. So I'm going to start with Kalpana. Kalpana's been in Gyal for 40 years and in Madhaban 35. And 10 years ago they initiated and started the Department of Spirituality and Wellbeing at Global Hospital. And Kalpana trained as a spiritual counsellor and psychotherapist and has been working in that department at the hospital ever since. So she could do with some help. Her department is well used, and so she's been privy and being able to see a lot of the kind of things that the Indian family present with, and I thought it'd be very interesting to hear from her what she sees as the kind of cultural perspective from an Indian, but if someone's from an Indian background, what they see mental illness as representing. Okay. So sorry, each of our speakers will speak for about 5 or 6 minutes each, and then we hope to start a kind of conversation, either between themselves or if you have questions as well. So that's how the session will go, and it will end at 12:15.
So thank you, Dr. Sana. Thank you for including me in this group. So as Dr. Sana said, that I'm taking care of the Department of Spirituality and Wellbeing in Global Hospital. The department has been emerged in 2015, and since then I'm experiencing many things in mental health area. So we have full-time psychiatrist with us, and then physician and all other doctors are also there. So they have been referring patients for the counseling. And when the patient comes for the counseling, I always see the expression and the behavior of the patient is like reluctant to go to the psychologist, because it is a kind of shame, or it is not good to meet a psychologist or a psychiatrist. So they kind of, reject. No, we don't want to see any psychologist. So in India, mental health is seen as a curse if you have any problem regarding your psychological illness, then it's a curse. It's a matter of shame. So people generally don't address it like cough and cold. We address immediately. We go to the doctor. We do some remedies at home at least to take care of it. But for mental health, they keep on hiding it from even their family. So there is stigma around mental health in India always, and slowly, slowly the awareness is increasing. You know, our government is now announcing on radio and TV that there are groups of mental health, supporting mental health. You can approach them. They are announcing the phone numbers, the contact numbers for the people, and they are making public aware that what is depression, what is anxiety, what is stress, when you need to approach to the doctor. So this awareness is increasing, but still the stigma is there. Another thing in India is we have family-centered identity. Like, individual cannot take decision on their own, whether it is for education, whether it is for professional choices, whether it is for their any decision. The decisions will be taken by the leader of the family or the whole family as a whole. So individual identity they sometimes lose, and suppression of emotions, suppression of their desires. You know, sometimes they want to choose some other area in education, and family forces them. There are many doctors, those who have been forced to take medicine. They were recently, we had a doctor as a MS in our hospital, and after prolonged psychological illness, he has started practicing medicine. But the reason was he didn't want it to go in medical field. His interests were somewhere else. So he's still suffering from, you know, addiction and mental distress and bipolar diseases. So family-centered identity is one of the things. Mental stigma around mental health, that is another thing. And again, when we find that there is mental illness, is, you know, people generally somatize, the somatization of emotional distress. Like, they feel, they will say, my stomach is upset, I'm having a migraine, you know, I can't sleep, I'm facing insomnia since so many years. I attended one mother, BK mother, who could not sleep since last 40 years in the night. During the day she keeps on dozing, but in the night she could not sleep. And when we met and had counseling sessions, then I found that in the family she had been beaten, she has had been, you know, like she is nothing in family. So her identity is just a homekeeping, housekeeping worker, like. And that is why she could not. And there was a sexual abuse also in her childhood. So these were the condition of the families. And in that family, again, we have gender role expectations. Like, mother or a daughter from the house, she has to do everything, household chores and responsibilities. Mothers also have to carry out all the responsibilities at household, and they don't, they should not, it is said that they should not think of any freedom from the household. Many of the mothers, they haven't come out of their houses since years for even traveling or somewhere like that. So this is the condition, family condition in India. And there is,
you know, hierarchy and respect to authorities is also there. So in family, generally the man of the house takes all the decisions, and according to hierarchy, you are not allowed to speak about your problems, and they are not free to speak. So they develop the habit of hiding their emotions, not expressing themselves easily in the family context. So whether you see the normal families or in BKs, it is the same thing, same problem is being faced by all. And generally we can see that the problem arises when the suppression of emotions are there, a lot of suppression of emotions. So that is also one thing. And since Corona we are facing in India, I think it's all about, the whole world must be facing, that online studies, and children have lost their focus, attention and concentration. So they don't like going back to the schools. And it has become the trauma for them to go back to the schools. And they have developed disinterest for studies. So this is again one of the problems. Social media influence is a bigger influence on mental health nowadays, because everybody is, you know, like engaged in social media. So there is one incident 1 year back I had. So I was meeting one brother after a long time here in Madhuban. So I asked him, "Where are you? I haven't seen you ages. Where are you?" "Oh," he said, "no, doesn't matter. You come online, I'll be available there." So people are generally available online, but they are not available face to face, and that is why the problems are increasing. People don't have time to listen to each other. So this is again, it is in our family culture, it is said that you should not listen to anybody else's problem and make your head a dustbin like. So people are, you know, like not ready to listen to others' problem. So these things are, we can say culturally, we are affecting mental health. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavana. And of course, yeah, through my mind I was wondering, how does that relate to BKs? You know, and you know, the effect of hierarchy and respect of authority and the gender role expectations, because you hear that sometimes center life people in centers have the same kind of issues, so it'd be worth going back to that. But thanks for sharing those very interesting aspects. So I'm now going to hand over to Pradeep. Deep has been in Gyan for 49 years. He lives based in Mauritius. He's a stress consultant, therapeutic counsellor and neurobiofeedback practitioner, and the coordinator of the Academy for Integrated and Sustainable Development in Mauritius. And at our recent mental health advisory group meeting, Pradeep, you said that in Africa in particular, you're trying now to have a stronger team of people looking at mental health issues because it's becoming such an issue in Africa in general. And you in particular raised something that I think is also overlaps with India, although you didn't mention it, Kalpana, about possession and how possession of an evil spirit, and how that's a very common belief in Africa. So over to you to share your perspective on what's the cultural influence of being African on mental health issues.
Om Shanti. Thank you, Sayana, for giving me the opportunity to be in the panel. Well, mental health is often understood differently across cultures and countries in Africa. Just like in Mauritius, we have a huge of the population, maybe 50% of the population is from Indian.
Could you speak a little slower and a little louder and more clearly for the translators?
Okay. Well, in Mauritius, when we look at mental health issues, it's just like in India, because we have around 50% of the population of Indian background, Indian origin. So the stigma is still here. And also, if a person is having any mental problem, it is considered as a shame. But as in Mauritius, it is a multiracial country. We do have people from all faith, and we have a well-established medical setup in Mauritius. So people can easily have access to any mental hospital, even clinics, and we also have many psychiatrists that are available. So very often we see that people, first of all, they don't just, when they have any mental problem, they don't go to the doctor or to hospital. First of all, they will try to go to see their priest, because it is considered as a taboo, and not to declare it to the community that they are having some mental problem. So they prefer to go there, and if they see that there is no any treatment is not working, then they will go to see a doctor or they will go to the hospital. But very often when it is in the very late stage, when it becomes more serious, then they have no other opportunity, no other choices than to go to see a medical doctor, psychiatrist. But now it's becoming less in Mauritius, because people, they prefer to go to see a psychiatrist in private rather than to go to the hospital. Still, the stigma is here. But when you look at the overall in Africa, it is completely different. Because in Africa, the health facilities are very, very rare. We have nearly, it is said, 80% of the population, they have access to healthcare facilities. So, as such, people, whenever they have any problem, they will turn to their healers, their spiritual healers. And the cultural perspective of mental health in Africa is deeply influenced by spiritual belief. We have also community values, ancestral connection, and traditional healing systems. So, as such, you see, people, they will not go for looking for help outside, because the first point of contact when they have any health issues, they will turn to their traditional healers. And most of the time, when even when we look at in Africa, access to medicine also is very limited. So they depend a lot on herbal. So they go to the herbalist. They, even when people, they are having any mental problem, so it is attributed to either spirit possession, it is attributed to witchcraft or sorcery. We have also angry ancestors or displeased ancestors, and spiritual imbalance, or we call it curses or spiritual punishment. So when mental illness is really considered like this, people go to their healers first for any remedies. And in this body of a real psychotic psychological problem, especially mental illness like psychosis, bipolar disease, those people, they undergo lots of trauma, because in the process of removing the evil spirits, they are being tortured physically. Even they have to take a bath in cold water, and they have a lot of atrocities that they have to undergo to just get rid of those of the evil spirits. And when nothing is happening, we see that lots of patients like this, they have no choice but to go to suicide. So even the suicidal rate in Africa is, I think, highest in the world. And we have, because in Africa, because lack of resources, lack of mental health professionals, and infrastructure, so people don't have other choices rather than go to these people. And we see that at times, we see that the possessions also, it's a real fact, because people do get possessed by evil spirit. Just like Baba used to say in Murlis, that in the end, there will be wholesale death. So lots of souls wandering, they will look for a body because they have attachment for so many births with a body. So they will need a body, and whenever they will find a soul who is weak, they will try to possess the body. Though they will not be able to stay in the body, but they will do it. That's why Baba said that we need to empower the self, make the soul so powerful, because in the end, we are going to face these challenges. And as such, we need to empower the self and take good care of the self. Because mental illness is also associated with a lack of essential nutrients for the brain. When we lack enough special vitamins and special proteins for the neurons to work properly, people present signs and symptoms of mental disorders. But we at the Academy for Integrated and Sustainable Development in Mauritius, we cater for people having mental disorders like stress disorders, anxiety disorders, panic disorders. They come to the center. Then those people who we see, they can really take the course, their situation is not that serious, they don't have any serious mental disorders, then we guide them through meditation, we help them to get rid of the stress. We use lots of technologies also. We have neurobiofeedback machines that can assess one's stress level. We have brainwave entrainment that can calm down a patient, someone who is not able to calm the mind, who have chattering of the mind, lots of thoughts coming, and they are not able to control their thought. So we use machine just to calm them down, and then we propose them meditation, and we told them how meditation can help them. And this is very successful in many cases. But whenever we see someone who is possessed or is having any serious mental disorders, then we direct them to the professional mental health professionals, the psychiatrist, psychologist, then they do their treatment, their follow-up. So this is how really we cater for mental health.
Thank you very much, Pradeep. And I think in India also the idea that any kind of mental illness is due to spirit possession is also a common belief, isn't it, Kalpana?
Yes, yes. Even in VKs sometimes, it is seen that the mental illness is taken as a possession of a soul, and they treat them not going to the doctors, psychiatrist or psychologist, but they are visiting what the priests and all. So they are visiting them for that, taking treatment from there. And when the condition worsens, then they come to doctor. So it's happening.
And I think, as you said, Pradeep, spirit possession does exist, but not every mental illness is due to spirit possession. So I think there are whole conferences on, is it possession or a brain disorder? And, so I'm not going into that depth today, but it's interesting. But I think when every mental symptom is treated as a possession by an evil spirit, that has a very damaging effect on the person who's experiencing it, because they're seen as bad for this to have happened to them, or it's bad karma, or that it doesn't really give them the right kind of help, or as you say, some of the treatments are very brutal and torturous. So that kind of leads us on, Dorit, to you, because Dorit is from Israel, and Dorit's been in Gyan 25 years, and she's a very experienced psychotherapist, a mental health coach, and has training in many different therapeutic modalities, but is particularly experienced in addressing trauma and treating trauma. And obviously, being in Israel at the moment, the whole country's traumatized, as are the countries around them and involved in the situation. So we're aware of that. But I think as more and more things are happening in the world, calamities, natural calamities, wars, political upheavals, this whole issue of trauma and what the effect it's having on people. And obviously Baba's invoking us to be in our angelic form to help people with trauma. But on the practical side, on the ground, what's been your experience and what do you think helps?
Thank you for inviting me on behalf of Israeli. And we are a big group in Israel, from Israel. It's very, very interesting now during the war. So Baba invoke us. Just to say something about mental health, you said it's like a curse. And in Israel, it's like a weakness. I think nowadays less thinking or the perception of weakness, because there is no choice. Something really, really happened, trauma, personally, family, generation, because in Israel, because of the Holocaust, so the 7th of October, the war began, so it's the history and the memories invoke, so it's more, so I want to talk about, and I search about trauma, and you know, the trauma, at the beginning, it was only for physical injury. Not psychiatry or not mental. So Freud came, so he put the psychotherapy and the mental on trauma. So in Israel, I want to say about what happened now, because it's very, very interesting, because Israel is, the culture is survival, yeah, in history. So what they do, four components dealing with trauma, collective, yes, like Carl Jung, collective trauma. One is black humor. There is a lot of black humor stand-ups about what happened with the alarm and the shelter, and it's amazing. So many, many people hear it, and it's like it's a release. So this is one thing very, very... one of them is it demonstrates anxiety, and he talked about his anxiety and what happened to him during day by day, and a lot of people come to hear it, a lot of people. So it's very, very interesting. This is one thing. The other, the solidarity. Wow, it's really, you can't believe, but when the trauma, collective trauma, it's organization, it's groups that suddenly arrange themselves for soldiers, buying things, food, clothes, everything is needed, cakes, some from my country, somebody opened like a shop of cakes, and people bring cakes for the soldier, and they are going and bring the soldier cakes. So just imagine the solidarity, how it helped the soldiers and the family during the trauma, because it's not PTSD, it's not post-trauma, it's trauma ongoingly. And now again with Iran, and also I'm sure that in Iran is the same traumatized, or every country that. So another thing, it's really people volunteer all over the country to help, open a retreat center, inviting. So it's so relief to the search to be together, how to be together to help to overcome this stress and anxiety, a lot of anxiety. And we can see it on road, yeah, the cars, the drivers, no patient, no, you know, there, everyone is in pressure, the cortisol is very, very high in the body. And actually the trauma is in the nervous system. So, and all the memories from previous trauma in the nervous system. And I think people now more aware and want to really recover. And there is a good news, because when they come to my clinic, I can see EMDR, for instance. Can I talk about EMDR? Because EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, okay? It's like a movement with the eyes, the two hemispheres. And what at the beginning, it wasn't under research, but now there is a research and a lot of research that it helped for trauma. And all bad memories also. So what happens, it's directly to the nervous system, and it releases the attachment of the situation that happened. Let's say car accident, okay? So car accident, there is all the senses experience that the accident, the smell, the eyes, what they see, what they hear, and what happened in the mind. It's like a I don't know, block, like it's a block in the mind, the nervous system. And every time, if let's say somebody saw a blood during the car accident, so when he see blood, something happened to his body, and the body is reflect, let's say, headache or migraine or something. And if they don't treat them, so illness come. And so what we are doing in the EMDR, it's release the attachment to the story, to the picture. And then the senses a little bit dissolve more and more. So it's not that if the trauma is finished, no. But you can handle it. It's not traumatized. It's like vague. And And I have personal experience, but I don't have time for it. But it's very, very good.
I think, Laura, it would be interesting for you to share the story you shared with me.
With you? Wow.
Yeah, the one where it happened to you fairly recently. Just also...
This with the... Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
It's traumatic. Prepare. Sit and hold.
But also what you noticed about yourself when it...
Yeah, happened. Yes. Thanks Baba that I have Baba with me with this trauma. okay. So I drove to see a client and I park the car and I call the client to where to park and where to go because it's a new one. And suddenly a car came and like stop in front of my car, like 2 meters, but it came like shh, boom. And I couldn't move. And then the one who sits near the driver opened the door, and it was a big one, big one, with black shirt, and he opened and move and get out, went out from the car, and on his left side was a gun. So he took the gun and like droop and point of me. It's 1 meter from me. Like this. Imagine. I don't know who is the guy. Nothing. What to do? If we are using our let's say automatically behavior, so oh I freeze, you know, can't move because the gun is like me, or I push the gas, so I drive. You know, towards him, and who knows what happened. So really, really thanks yoga, Baba, because I didn't think Baba. But what I did, and after it I thought about it very, very deeply, and it was trauma because I got a treatment after it. So I look at him in his eyes, I smiled, and I took my eye and my hand and said, like this. Like this. So, he smiled to me, and he put his head towards the driver, and he said, so the same posture, what I did, he did to the driver. And the driver went, and I drive from there. This is it. And what amazingly, when I meet with the family, I didn't think about the situation at all. It was like block. Nothing happened. I was with the family. It's a business family. With the family, and as if nothing happened. The moment I get to the car, it arrives again. So, what happened now, what I want to demonstrate is, nowadays, when I see a gun, so, you know, like this, it's fragile. And I did, yes, for me, treatment. Because, yeah, it was very hard. But thanks, Baba. I couldn't smile. You can't smile when you are in stress and all the mechanism in the body and the nervous system, like this is dangerous, you know, like this. So it's only Baba. Without thinking, that's my observation. You can't think Baba because if I'm thinking Baba, I'm thinking. So it can be this on this. But it was like a lie, like the intellect, I know now, I didn't know before, the intellect was with Baba, that's it. That's why the smile came.
Oh, thank you, Troy. Very dramatic.
No, thank you. That you
interesting. And I think for Souls, Troy is doing a workshop on the 10th of March, and she'll be sharing some of the healing modalities that she's developed in her clinic and how BKs can use them. So if you want to go into that in more depth, do come to her workshop on the 10th morning, I think.
Yeah, morning, yeah. 10:30.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. So
thank
I
you.
Think, and we're glad you're still here, and we'll remember that story. If we get a gun pointed at us, we'll smile and go, or something similar. So, finally, Mary Jane. Mary Jane is from Canada, and she's a mental health nurse, and she's been in Gyan 25 years. And I think, 31 years, and a mental health nurse for 35 years. And you're on the core team of the Mental Health Advisory Group internationally. And Mary Jane, in the light of, you know, this obvious increase in people experiencing all kinds of trauma, and a few of us have been on some trainings to be a more trauma-informed organization. How should we as, what's your understanding of that? And how should we as BKs maybe raise our awareness of how we're practicing or how we're interacting with the public, sort of based on the fact that a lot of people will be turning up with quite a tricky story that they're carrying with them?
Thank you. Sarah, and thank you for all the sharings this morning. I was reflecting on a little bit. I'm just going to talk just a briefly minute about culture, because I was reflecting on, I come from Canada, and I've worked for 35 years in mental health and psychiatry, but as a nurse, we're the ones that are with the patients or with the people after the doctor has assessed or before the doctor has assessed and provided recommendations for treatment. So we're more focused on care and soothing and helping people regulate or feel safe. And in North America, I was listening of what's happening in Africa and India, and in Canada and the U.S., I would say that it's a very individualistic society, and yet there is increasingly more problems with mental health and substance use, and that there's still stigma attached to accessing help. So it's worldwide. But the good news is there are things that we can do. And I don't know about everybody out in the audience, but I was listening to these three lovely souls share what's going on in their parts of the world, and I feel very privileged. And yet I've also been privileged to walk alongside others who have had traumatic experiences or struggles with mental illness. And so the good news about hearing all this is that everybody can be part of that solution. And what I mean by that is, Sarah mentioned trauma-informed. And what do we mean by trauma-informed? And this is, I think it's really important to understand the definition. And Droit was talking about this collective traumatic events that are going on currently. And those are traumatic events. How we absorb them, how we experience them will be individual, and some people will be traumatized, and some people will experience the adverse event and navigate through it with a different impact. So it has different impact on everyone. So to be trauma-informed is all about understanding what trauma is and the impact on one individually. So there's physical impact and there's psychological impact. So Drowit's example of having that experience where she, you know, that scene came in front of her and then it passed and then she carried on like nothing had happened. But then being back at the car, that scene came back to her. And so then she needed to do some work to work through that process. Being trauma-informed means understanding what is trauma and what are the symptoms or what are the things that come along with being traumatized. And so it means that something happened that was startling, had effect or injured me in a psychological or physical way, or both. And sometimes the psychological impacts aren't apparent at the time. They become apparent over time. So whether there's anxiety, loss of sleep, memories of the event, and fear increases, and so then safety becomes insecure. And so being trauma-informed means understanding how trauma impacts, and then how do I want to be? So Drowit shared her story. I want to be compassionate. I want to be understanding. And I want to move away from judgment. Now, all of that aligns with Brahman life, doesn't it? But that doesn't mean that having this spiritual path gives us a bypass to trauma. We don't get to bypass it. We actually, at times, may have to look at that from that lens of creating, how do I create safety? Safety is the foundation to being a trauma-informed person. Being person-centered, which means I care about you. I have that, I want to listen, I want to hear what you have to say, I want to understand. And not from what's wrong with you, but what's happened. So it's really checking and staying curious, non-judgmental, and in the language. So to be a trauma-informed organization or be part of a group that is trauma-informed, we want to create a culture where everyone feels safe. We want to create communication that's clear, transparent, and trustworthy. We want to be collaborative. We want to be, make sure that everybody has choice. Now, that does not mean abandoning our own aim. So if I come back to being a Raj Yoga student or the Brahma Kumaris as an organization, we're here to teach meditation. We're here as students to develop our spirituality and the ultimate goal of being an angel. However, we come with our stories. And some of us come with some trauma. Some of us come with those kinds of things. So the other factor in being trauma-informed is recognizing the strength and resiliency in each individual. Because out of adversity, out of trauma, there's a strength. So I listened to Drowit's story just now, and I saw so much courage, so much strength in that. And if I was to poll every one of you, you probably would each pick a different virtue that you just saw. So then we can reflect on ourselves. Because sometimes, when I was listening to each member of the panel speak, I was drawn to stories I have, things I've heard. And so being trauma-informed doesn't mean sharing more stories, because being trauma-informed means we're conscientious that we're not going to trigger others' trauma, or that we are going to share details of our own story that could be disturbing to someone else. So in that, it is about acceptance, it is about choice, it is about traffic control. Trauma-informed, to wrap it up, is it's about empowerment. And I get drawn back to early on in my Brahman days. I did the course on the Living Values for Education course, and in there's the how do you create a values-based atmosphere. And being trauma-informed is just that. It's about making people feel safe, valued, respected, understood, and cared for. And when we can do that, along with some really good listening skills, and listening skills doesn't mean hearing the story, it means understanding the person, seeing where they're at, and if somebody in front of you is struggling, is listening enough to say, hey, I'm here. And some of the most profound experiences I've had supporting people that were going through really challenging, difficult, traumatic times was when all I did was sit and listen and then help them to come up with solutions. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rachel. So, be interesting to see if you have any questions. Certainly, I don't know if there's a microphone on the floor or we can share it. I mean, I think for me it's the sense that all these factors are real, and they're real for us, but even within the Brahman family there is a sense of often struggling to take help for these things. And certainly the trauma-informed training that I did, it was very helpful. Sort of showed that faith-based organizations or community organizations are very good at making people feel supported and that they belong. So in a sense, just identifying the problem. But if someone has severe trauma, they really do need proper professional help with the kind of techniques that Dora was talking about to help them process it. And then the community again helps with integrating and getting on with your life. So we have a role as the Brahman family in supporting each other, but just to try and make it less stigmatizing for us to ask for help, or for us to be able to find someone in the family we can find who does listen to us and shares. And I think it, you know, it happens at all levels. People in centres, people higher up the hierarchy, lower down the hierarchy. Sorry? Yeah, I'll get to it. Hold on. That we hope that just by being more transparent, I think that's what we mean by being transparent, talking about it, being more open, that people feel more able to take the support they need. So who had the question? Have you got the microphone?
Shanti. Вопрос такой. Если у нас вот в этом сообществе работа с фантомными болями после травм, ну как, вот, наверное, нет руки, нет ноги, просто я на своей дедушке это увидела, это страшное явление.
Who's translating for you?
She said about after trauma, maybe broken some legs and cutting legs, and they feel some phantom pain. Phantom pain.
Phantom pain, yeah.
Yeah, that's about men who cutting.
So his leg after the knee operation, any part of his body was cut, but he still feels the itching. So how it can be? How to heal or help to such a person?
I mean, it's not directly related to this topic, really. Phantom limb pain is a neurological problem, so I don't think we're going to go into that right now. So is there any question that's relevant to what we've been talking about? Or any comments, anything you've observed or noticed yourselves?
Thank you so much for all the insights and giving this opportunity to ask a question. I'm Neelu from Thailand, been in GAM for 15 years. Often as a BK, I mean, again, belonging to an Indian culture, being raised in India, but having lived in Thailand for 30 years and been in GAM for 15 years, we can't really seek help, mental help for anything, to our Laukik, because they feel that having joined a spiritual institution, we are supposed to exude and display a certain amount of a code of conduct already, which we all know we are on a journey and we can't. The same expectation is also being kept by the seniors or by our colleagues or whoever is around at the centers as well. And the answers many times that if we try to open up with each other are often very theoretical knowledge related and not really from a psychological aspect. Now, again, having said that, it is because whoever we are approaching or asking is not trained psychologically. So I'm sorry for giving this much of explanation, but my simple question would be, is there a BK pool of brothers and sisters that are there in any other parts of the world that we can connect with when we are trying to seek, and they may not be available physically in the country, but anywhere else, and feel understood, accepted? All we need is we want to be heard, we want to be seen, so that we can find our own answers. We know no one else can find that for us, but just need that safe space within the BK community.
Thank you. Yeah, no, thank you. That's a very honest question. And a good one. And we've tried to set up advisory groups in countries, and I think we could definitely strengthen that. Finding out who in the country, which BKs have got some mental health experience, and set up the groups, but they don't exist in every country, and we possibly need to, you know, try harder to find those people. Or, as you say, nowadays with Zoom and everything, you can access people in different countries. But it's a good idea to strengthen that network. And also I think just for, I mean, there are, we do exist, and just to, for even us having this session here now, I think is raising the profile that there are people. And for Australasia, Gopi Elton in Lura is the kind of main person for that area. So you could contact her and just see if there's anyone she can put you in touch with. For sure. I don't know. Any thoughts, Mary Jane?
Yeah, I thought it was a great question, and the thought that comes to mind is, I mean, we have the core group, and we recognize the need and the reason that, say, the panel is here today is because there is a recognized need to be able to have the forum where we can talk about mental health, we can talk about trauma, and we can talk about it within the family. That said, I think, and I liked the way that she worded that question, because she said, is there somebody that can help us navigate? They're not looking to Raj Yoga for the answer. They're looking for some understanding and a safe space to acknowledge that this is going on. And we do know that it does impact our yoga. It impacts our ability, and sometimes we feel stunted in our spiritual growth when we're struggling. So it's a work in progress, and I think the way to go is Gopi right now. But we would like to see more structure put to this so that there wasn't that unknown, that people know if they're struggling they can call someone.
Yeah. So hopefully it will improve. We're doing our best. But there is a mental health resource which is on our Yagya website, which you can access through your center coordinators. Yeah, in India, you do say something, Kalpana, because it's a huge problem here.
I have attended few of the people, those who are practicing Ayurveda since many years, and somehow they came to know that I can help them. So they have taken the help from me. I am available online to help them. So anytime, if you want to talk to me, I'm available evening at 8 to 9. I've kept a separate time to talk to people online. So many of the foreigners have contacted me earlier, and if somebody needs help, they can easily contact me. Thank you.
And we've just started in India trying to gather a list of qualified mental health professionals that can act as a resource to Indian brothers and sisters. Oh, okay. Next one. Sorry. Go on.
Om Santi. I'm from Indonesia, Bali. So I have a question, a short sentence. How to guide ourselves for expressing the emotion? Thank you.
How to guide ourselves for expressing our emotions? Because I think, as Kalpana said, in India, suppressed emotion is a big problem. But in Asian cultures generally, I've heard it's quite an issue. Suppression of emotion is quite an issue. I don't know. Dorit, do you want to ask?
So find someone to talk with whom you feel comfortable sharing your emotions, and keep practicing expressing your emotions. That is very important. You know, we have to take care of ourselves. If we find that I am not able to speak up my feelings and emotions, so I have to help myself first to find someone to share the emotions. So find someone who can understand you, who can listen to you, and you can easily express without any judgment. They can listen to you.
Can I add, as a start, on the 10th, we are going to share, and it's like heart-to-heart conversation, and practical, and even EMDR. Let's see who is joined, and then accordingly we can have fun with emotion.
Okay, are you here on the 10th? Yeah, come to Drawit's workshop. Okay, Judy.
Thank you. Thank you. That was so helpful, all of that. I want to say that we had MJ come to Halifax to do an emergency mental health training for our sisters at the center, and it was so helpful, because our sisters are more inclined to listen too much and get too helpful, well, try to be helpful in an area that is not theirs. So they listen beautifully, so nicely. And I think what we discovered when MJ came was that, oh, we don't have to think about, is that depression? is that bipolar, is that we just have to listen and then ask what support do they have in their life and then have some resource options available for them so we don't step into an area that is not ours. So I found that very helpful. So I just wanted to say it's out there and recorded by MJ. So Om Shanti.
So how do we access that?
Actually, MJ is me.
I know that.
I did a mini session with the Halifax BK team, and it was based on mental health first aid.
Yeah.
And that's what Judy's talking about, is the foundation. Mental health first aid is an external organization that's around the world, and it is in India. And it's skills based, and it's for any lay person to learn how to be kind, caring, and supportive to someone, but not take on their problem. Yeah.
Yeah, so mental health first aid, it's been mentioned before. Check and Google it and see if it's available in your country. And if it is, try and get as many BKs, teachers or centre people or whatever to do the course. It's very, very practical and helpful. So that, but I meant the recording of it, where is that? That's what we meant. But where could it be put that other people could see it? Can it go on our Yakya? On YouTube?
Could you send it to Sister Kieran and she'll upload it?
Because that would be great. And similarly, Mary Jean and I were talking about trying to design a kind of trauma-informed organization course or just some training, particularly for BKs.
Thank you. I've started
already 5 minutes over, just to tell everyone.
Yeah. I've already started a first aid response for mental health issues, and I'm presenting that at the International Teacher Training. And so.
Oh, great. Yeah. So Mary Jean is also part of the teacher training team, and she's going to incorporate some of this in. It's at ORC, isn't it? Yeah. So it is getting incorporated into the teacher training. So that's a really wonderful development. Rajini.
Thank you for this opportunity. I have one question from the sister there in Sri Lanka and also a comment from me. What she's asking is, like, in our center, there is this sister who's coming for class, and I could see that she has some mental illness, but how should I tell her directly? Am I allowed to tell her directly, or will it affect her? And how to deal with such people? We need guidance because we don't have guidance. That's what she's asking.
And your comment? Just for you.
Okay. And my comment is, I really liked it. Of course, I came halfway through the discussion, and I really liked the idea of having such training on trauma informed. Especially for the BKs, and if I would like to ask also, are you planning the same for the Indian teachers? Because I think it's very much needed, and at this juncture, I also thank Sister Kalpana because she has also helped me at one point. So yes, we need. Even I still have that stigma to go on to any other outside psychiatrist or any other person to take help. So if we have any VKs who can help traumatized VKs, it would be really helpful. And I really like the idea of the trainings. And as Sister Mary was mentioning, that when you are trauma-informed, you make them feel understood, you make them feel respected, and you make them feel valued, and you make them feel supported. All these four things, and in my own experience, I didn't have that experience because the others were not trauma informed. So I think it's really good to have.
So Rajani, just to give it some context, you were in a center in India, you experienced some trauma, but when she had the incident, you experienced some trauma and you found that the organization was not very responsive to what happened to you. So I think you're speaking from very deep personal experience. And hopefully, I totally agree that Indian teachers need this training and quite a lot of more organized help around mental health and mental illness, and we're working on it.
Thank you.
So we're trying our best.
Thank you.
Yeah, but back to the question, Pradeep, do you want to say anything about that? You notice a student has got some mental illness, and what do you say?
Well, I think that, first of all, whenever we, especially at the center, we see that our sisters and brothers, they are not mental health professionals. So to cater for mental health issues, we need to have compassionate listening. So it requires lots of time. So if we are not well acquainted with how to cater for them, so we just, as Dr. Eger said, that we have just to listen and then direct them where to a special unit, mental health professionals, so that they can have appropriate treatment. Or else we will end up with compassionate burnout, like Brother Charlie did last time. So we need to know our limits, our boundaries, because just like meditation is not a punisher for serious mental illness. It is not here to make magic. It is not here to do marriage counseling, for example. So there's then, because meditation is here just to give us the knowledge of the self, to give us the knowledge of the Supreme, how to connect with the Supreme and take spiritual power to increase the inner strength. And we are not here as healers, we are not here as doctors to treat patients. So here we need, I'm making a humble request to all the center coordinators to have access to their mental health manual, which is written very clearly in simple language by Sister Diane, where you will be, there are lots of information available in this for mental issues. So once we know our limits, we know, and we can easily, once we go through the manuals, you can easily sort out who is behaving a bit differently and need specialized treatment.
Okay. And in fact, we try to organize Mary Jane to give a mental health first aid training this time, but it turned out to not fit in with the schedule, sadly. But maybe another season we can actually provide a mental health first aid training. Last question.
One thing, if you need to have the bus to Pandavapuram, you have to go now. Yeah.
Very quickly, I'm Annette and I work for a specialist refugee mental health NGO in Auckland, New Zealand, and I manage the training program. And for the last 4 years we've been running trauma-informed care for educators in schools, preschools and the tertiary education sector.
Can we have your email, please?
Yes, I'd love to join your network. I'll just to cut it short, we've had initially a focus on getting children and young people who are traumatised self-regulated, and which puts the onus on the child to change their behaviour, improve their learning ability. But more recently, theorists like Delahook and De Soto's American specialists in the area of trauma in the education sector have focused on co-regulation, which I find strongly aligned to what we're doing in Brahma Kumaris. Yeah. In terms of maintaining a calm, stable stage. And
that's sort of like giving yoga power, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, totally. So we've workshopped right around the country in resettlement centres, and a lot of teachers on the quiet say, you help me deal with my trauma, and I know I need to deal with that before I can help others.
Yeah, so, no, and it'd be lovely to connect with you and see how we could develop some training. That'd be wonderful. Thank you. And just to finally pick up on Judy's point about, and it's come up a lot, where the boundaries are, because a lot of us are really, we want to help people, but when we tip over into rescuing or trying to fix or taking on the burden of someone else's situation, then we get stressed as well. So it's just trying to keep that balance of what our role is as Raj Yoga teachers, and where we need to try and... I think locally, if you can find a network of... There might not be BK practitioners, but they're sort of cooperative souls or people who are sympathetic to a spiritual approach. And there are lots of them out there. So, and to try and encourage people to, once you get the name of someone whose people have found helpful, and build up your own little local directory of who are the kind of practitioners who could support us through these kind of challenges that we all have. So I think we'll finish there, and thank you all for coming and listening, and thank you to our panelists, Mary Jean, Jorrit, Pradeep and Kalpana. And this session will be recorded, so if you found it helpful, you'll find it on the Double Foreigner YouTube site. Thank you.